add to the announcements that Lori Williams is going to be undergoing gallbladder surgery. Ken, was that tomorrow? Any family where the wife and mother's out of commission, things are desperate. So we might want to see what we can do, not only to encourage Lori, but provide for the needs of John and Jonathan and James as they may arise. Several, probably months ago now, I was asked to preach a lesson, something along the title of The Christian and the Office. And realizing that my vocational experience is somewhat different from many of you, I really didn't feel comfortable trying to explain to you what your office environment is like. And so what I did was I started sampling around and getting some feedback from some of you in order to try to gain for myself a better understanding of what it means to go out, as we might say, among the world every day, probably in closer quarters than we would like, and try to carve out a living for our families and provide for them in the midst of some very difficult and uncomfortable circumstances for Christians to be in. And so the lesson this morning, and probably next Sunday morning as well, are going to be the fruit of some of that feedback I've gotten and some thinking that I've done, trying to help us deal with the environment, the very worldly and all too often ungodly and immoral environment in which many have to make their living in this world. Today I'm going to deal primarily with the challenges that are presented to us in this environment, and next Sunday the opportunities that will come to us by these circumstances that we find ourselves in. In the first part of the lesson, what I really would like to do is just simply give you some of the feedback from the surveys that I did. And I'll try to be as brief as I know how to be in getting through some of these, just so you will have an idea of what some of your brethren have said about their circumstances. And I think some good things can come out of this. Number one, just understanding up front what is it this world is that we're living in and functioning in. Not that we can't figure that out on our own. But I think another element of this is to understand that these things are being faced by others of my brethren. I think the discouragement sometimes comes in when we begin to think, I'm the only one trying to fight this battle. And not that we really may literally think that, but it's that sense of loneliness that we may have. One person in the office, one person against the world. And then we begin to feel overwhelmed and overmatched and outnumbered, and discouragement can set in. So these are some of your observations about what makes it difficult for you to be a Christian in the office environment. And let me also say that that's the way this was phrased from the standpoint of the office. It may be that, you know, somebody here works in the factory or in some other work environment not strictly considered an office. I think there are going to be things you'll recognize too in this list. But there are many challenges to our moral purity as we rub elbows day in and day out, hourly, with those who are very worldly in their thinking. And one of the things that was mentioned by several was the difficulty of dealing with foul language that's heard all day, every day. And this may come in a variety of forms. It may come just in raw profanity. Just every profane and useless word that you can think of, substituting for people's sensible vocabulary. And it seems like there's not an end to people's habit of reaching into the realm of profanity and dragging out a word and giving it multiple meanings instead of actually thinking about it for a moment and choosing the appropriate word for the situation. Isn't that just disgusting and disheartening that we can't get beyond profanity as a nation? And this exists at the highest of levels, which some of you pointed out in your remarks. And if it's not profanity, it may be jokes and sexual innuendos, suggestive things that are said with seemingly this one theme that runs through our television shows and one theme that runs through our movies. and that's the sensual side of life. And it may be one of the challenges of language is not the profane, as it were, but gossip. Either someone bringing you some salacious story about what they've heard going on among some of the co-workers, or rumors about work itself and the ebbs and flows of the power structure and who's on the way out and et cetera, et cetera. And those kinds of things can perhaps be more damaging in the work environment than the profanity issues. But nonetheless, we communicate by language and we try to share thoughts by our words. And unfortunately, so many of the thoughts that are trying to be shared are not the thoughts that a Christian would be thinking, nor does he want to hear such things. Well, if it's not language, it may be just outright sexual perversion. It may be the adulterous affairs that are going on among the co-workers and who's sleeping around with whom in the office. It may not be hearing or seeing it. It may be sexual advances directed toward you. And if not that, even worse than that, is your attraction to someone else in the office. The fact that we spend so much time with these people and sharing together and sometimes very emotional interactions, working on some big project, and we're shoulder to the grindstone with members, attractive members of the opposite sex. And we're dealing with them all day, every day. And we come to appreciate their intelligence and their business savvy and their creativity. And boy, they can get things done. Not like my wife, I'll tell you. And on, we begin these comparisons. And we begin to be drawn more toward the co-worker than the spouse. And so it might not be the adultery going on among the co-workers. It may be the approaches, the attractions that are made toward me. It may be the frustration of forced association with homosexuals and even sensitivity training that is done in so many jobs these days to try to tear down that wall of abhorrence and repugnance towards something that just is. We can try to pretend like homosexuality is something else all we want to, and it still is what God says it is. And yet there's this assault which happens upon us that tells us we're wrong to be drawing such conclusions. And we're wrong to be making such judgments. And we ought to look at certain people no differently than others. And so that can, again, I think, wear us down and be very frustrating to us. There are challenges to our character and integrity, and time just simply won't allow to explore all of these things as fully as we might. But one of the challenges, I think, in the office environment to our character and integrity is ego. That is, we begin, perhaps, to believe our press, to begin to feel as privileged and special as our work title might suggest. And we have deference, perhaps, given to us by others who are our underlings. And so we're treated with this great deal of honor, and we have prestige that comes with the name on the nameplate on our desk. And the danger in that is we might actually come to define ourselves as a person by that position that we hold. And so we begin to define ourselves not so much anymore like God would have us. We begin to define ourselves by the work environment and by what position and status I may hold on the job. And so there are many other elements in which our ego can become too tied up in our jobs. But moving on, several of you mentioned the tendency or the pressure even to lie or to deceive, being ordered to do so by your superiors. It might be that the projections about the work being finished or the amount of money it's going to take to finish the job, something about the future good of the company might need to be padded in order to protect the shareholders or whatever. The financial condition maybe of the company as a whole, to jockey the numbers around a little bit so that things appear to be better perhaps than they really are, or maybe worse than they really are, depending on what outcome the company wants. Posturing in negotiations. You know, swell up and get real big and go into the negotiation and present yourself and your company and its position as being something that really isn't, just in order to gain an advantage over the opponent or the company bidding against you or whatever it may be. Padding expense reports. just for a while, I'd like to be on one of those things. Where I could go to another city and eat wherever I want, all I want, and charge it to somebody else. That's a great deal. There's some really, really neat perks in the work world. A company provided automobile. Boy, that'd be great. And you know, it tends to spoil us to the point that we think what's handed to us on the silver platter isn't enough. Not after all the blood, sweat, toil, and tears that I give this company. I deserve a little bit more, I'll tell you. Being away from my family and all that sort of stuff, which we'll talk about in a minute. And so it may be that we're not satisfied with the expense accounts and all of that stuff, and so we begin to add and pad and make that out to be something bigger than it really is. Or timesheets. Fudging as to when we really started our workday or when it really ended. Taking advantage of someone else to make ourselves look better so that we might have a leg up in advancement. If I can somehow engineer things to have that credit funnel toward me, or just slip in a word about my coworker somewhere, just take him down a notch, plant a little seed in the mind of the boss so that they might begin to interpret things in a certain way about that person because they're in my way. And I think, in fact, they're ahead of me. And I want what they got. I want that position. I want that salary. I want that title. I want that corner office. And so maybe I could take them down just by a little thing said or done to plant some seeds of doubt. Well, again, many, many challenges along these lines. Social occasions. Several of you mentioned cocktail meetings, wining and dining the clients, taking them out to dinner, and they want to run up the bar tab, and you have to have the company credit card or whatever to pay for it. Office parties, required attendance at parties, and you know, most of you know how that goes, and how the flow of the evening degenerates, and it gets, you know, into the drinking, and then the ridiculous behavior, and Christians are looking for the exit, and would never be there to start with, unless perhaps it was ordered by the boss. But there are all kinds of challenges to our moral purity in this environment of close association with people that do not share our values or any consideration for God. Well, those are, you know, these are going to overlap. Challenges to our morality are also challenges to our spirituality, but I've sort of divided these just for the sake of trying to keep some of these things apart. But there are many challenges to our spiritual well-being apart from just the moral undermining. Several of you mentioned prayer, study, and worship time being encroached upon by what we're having to give to the company. And in fact, someone mentioned how they sat down and calculated how much time during the week actually goes to the job and fellow employees and employers, and how much goes to the family. And that can be a huge frustration to us when we understand what our family responsibilities are and what how much our children and our wives and or husbands need us, and the time that we have to give to them. And then as the job begins to encroach on that, we find that perhaps we begin fudging on the wrong things. We fudge on the prayer time, or it's Wednesday night at 6:30. Where's my lesson sheet? I got to hurry. Or better yet, you drive, dear, while I fill out my lesson on the way. And just chip away here and there, and we're perhaps only in retrospect do we realize how far we've drifted away from God because of the incredible time demands of the job. The constant taking of God's name in vain, I separated that from the language one just because it to me fits into a little bit of a different category. Are you not sick to death of how many things God's name can be irreverently attached to? I mean, we can take God's name in vain in countless, numberless ways. And people do. And if it's not the name of God Himself, it's the name of the Lord being taken in vain. It's interesting, not many people seem to do that with the Holy Spirit. They can take His name in vain differently. They can attribute to Him things that He doesn't do or actions that He doesn't cause. And so, you know, blasphemy comes in different ways. It's not just profanely using the name of God. It may be speaking God in a way that's just not true. But here I'm thinking about the people that we see around us all the time that just continually join the name of God to something ungodly. And I suppose on one level we could be tempted by that over time, but I think on another level, just spiritually, it just like is just an ice pick. You know, every time, just jab me one more time with that ice pick. If I hear the name of the Lord taken in vain one more time, well, now we're angry. You know, so we're challenged spiritually by that frustration and that sense of futility, maybe, of hearing the world refer to God so often and yet be so ignorant and blind about doing it. Religious debates in the office. Do I get involved or not? Is this the time? Is this the place? And it's so difficult, I know, to hear so much conversation going on around at the office. So much ignorance. People speaking for God or speaking for the Bible, and you're sitting there going, where do I start? How do I even begin to eat that elephant? And should I? And it's the company time. And so, and it may be that we're dragged into that debate. And once dragged in and we begin to make our views of God's Word and His will known to our co-workers, now we're alienated. Because there's Bill the Bible beater. Yeah, we know what he's going to say. Oh, and then you get shunned and then left out because we don't want Mike the Bible beater to be around when we're discussing these things. He's so square. And so all kinds of difficulties then begin to come out even if we do get involved in that debate. And we do speak up for God either to defend His name or His doctrines or the morality that should flow from an understanding of Him. And then there's just the problem of abusive employers and co-workers. It's frustrating to see the wicked prosper, isn't it? This is not what this lesson's about. But there's so many good scriptures we can turn to and so many great men of faith that have lamented this very point in history. Why are the wicked prospering? And here I am trying to do what's right. And I'm trying to live purely and speak uprightly, and this is the treatment I get for it. Can be very difficult. And it may not be the tendency for you to stab somebody in the back to get a leg up, but somebody may have gotten you right in the kidney. And you didn't find out about it till the whole thing was said and done, and they got the promotion or somebody else got the promotion because somebody lied about you. I can't help but think of Daniel along this line. The resentment, the ill will directed toward Daniel because he was being promoted. He held a high position, being a foreigner, high position in government. And those that laid schemes and traps for him, and they'll do the same to us. And then this was interesting. Someone made this observation. To spend so much time and effort and be involved in this ungodly environment day after day after day for something that really in the end doesn't even matter. And here's the feeling of emptiness or the vanity of being Rosie the Riveter, you know, standing in an assembly line and putting on the same bolt all day long. Or otherwise being involved in projects that, you know, when all is said and done, this great thing, this great edifice that we've worked on building, give it a 20 or 25 year period, it's going to look ratty and run down, and property values will change around it, and the trend of society will go a different way, and they'll be blowing that thing up to make room for something else. That which we consider to be, and this is so interesting to consider this in the newspaper. I love hearing sometimes political commentary on television and commentary from people that have lived 25 and 30 years ago, Henry Kissinger, somebody back in the Nixon era, and to think of how vitally, crucially important it was at that moment in time that the right word be spoken and the right policies be put in place. And here we are 25 or 30 years later in a whole different world. Things have moved on. What was so vitally important to national security then is printed in a magazine today. The world has moved in another direction. And so ultimately, when we're out there killing ourselves for the job, we're doing it with this little thought in the back of our mind, what is this worth anyway? Not to say that the services that are provided in our jobs are worthless. That's not true. But it's not, in the end, the product that I'm producing that really makes the difference. And we'll talk about this more next week, but really what's going to make the difference is not the product you're producing, it's the way you handled yourself when you produced the product. It's not the product. And before we get too high and mighty, perhaps, with our job positions, we're not going to be remembered. This just passed me by. Yesterday, some comments were being made on a golf show I was watching about Tom Kite, and he's a golfer, sort of the former generation, who had gone on to the senior tour, which you join after 50, and then Tom Kite decided he's going to go back and play with the young guys who can hit the ball, you know, 100 yards past him. And people were asking, why are you doing this? And he was talking about the sense of history, that all these young players are coming along, and I don't know, Tom Kite's 53, 54, 55, somewhere along in there. And he was talking about the importance of these younger players playing with a sense of the history of the game and the ones that had helped them get to where they are. Well, it's an admirable thought. He's still probably going to lose. But the idea is, when I'm past my prime and I've moved on, so is your company. You know, the gold watch thing, and thank you very much, and, you know, here's your little pension if it's not been stolen yet. What does the name on the nameplate mean? Well, it may mean something right now, in the here and now, but give it 10 or 15 years, it won't mean a lot. And a Christian, if he understands that, may struggle with that very point. Well, then what am I doing all this for? And so that can be a problem. Well, there are challenges to the quality of our life. Interestingly, and I found this very heartening, several people said the problem of too much money. I mean, if I had offered the promotion, I should take it, shouldn't I? How many of us have wrestled with whether or not, if we take the promotion or the move or whatever, how is making too much money going to detrimentally affect my life? Is that on your radar screen anywhere? Just a personal note, we'll pass along. But, you know, we condemn that in preachers. We will roundly and quickly condemn a preacher for deciding to go from A to B because there's more money involved in that. And maybe rightfully so. He may need to be condemned. I don't know what his further motives are. But simply on the basis of money, we'll condemn in one person what we ourselves would readily accept for us. Is it always better to take the money? Is it always better to make more money? Is it always better to be trying to climb that corporate ladder so we can live in the better neighborhood and have a more expensive and a larger house on a bigger piece of property out in the country, you know, 40 miles away from where I work? Is that always better? Sometimes it may be that Satan is telling us that's better. But is it? Might it be that Satan's the one, in essence, dangling the promotion out there in front of us, saying, go ahead. Go ahead. You take the promotion, I have more of you. I have more of you in my control. And then with the promotion, too much money, and the prestige comes too little time. We may not realize that till later. But companies don't pay big salaries. Well, StarSafer figureheads, but some of them do, obviously. I think Delta's done that, based on what I've read in the paper. Paying employees that no longer huge salaries are providing services for the company. So I guess in this day and time, some people are paid for being a figurehead. But unless you're the CEO of the company, people generally expect to get out of you something for what they're paying you. And it probably involves a lot of time, a lot of your energy, a lot of your concentration, time away from your family. And all of that can be stirred up by the intoxication of advancement and feelings of responsibility of the company, because after all, now they're giving me the salary and they put me in this position. I owe them. People put their necks on the line to get me this position. Now I have to fulfill my responsibility. And then that can become workaholism, or that can really be its own problem. That I just feel better when I'm out there in the world working and being active and productive and pursuing my goals, and I feel at home. And so then we begin to take voluntary trips and overtime and whatnot that undermines us spiritually. And then you add all that up, and what do we have? We have stress. Mental, emotional, and physical stress. Projects and deadlines and job instability. Am I going to have my job next week, next month, next year. Exhaustion. Nobody actually specifically mentioned that point. I threw that one in there, but I guess it follows from a lot of this other stress and strain and the mental and emotional and spiritual deprivation at times. You know, in the end, I think we just get tired. And I don't know about you. I don't know how you respond to exhaustion, but I don't cope real well when I'm really, really, really tired. My temper may be shorter, and I'm just not able to focus and concentrate on things, and at times I'm not perhaps as pleasant to be around as I need to be. But I don't function that well when I'm just absolutely running on empty. Is that the way you feel most of the time? You feel like you got energy to spare? Or do you feel like you're running on empty? Well, some basic observations about some of these circumstances in which many work. The office is an environment that poses an obvious threat to our spiritual well-being, and we need to look at it that way. We need to approach our job and the people we associate with as being an obvious threat to our spiritual well-being. So many of these things we've talked about this morning, if we had a choice, the advice would be don't do that. Don't associate with them. Don't go there. Don't listen to that. Don't watch that. Don't be involved in that. But yet when it's the job, it may be that's what we have to deal with, if not long term, at least for now. And so we need to understand, when I walk into this world, I am walking into Satan's world. And so few people in that world care about God, consider God at all. They don't operate by value systems that God would approve of. I am going into the world, as we say when we dismiss in prayer. Now, Lord, as we go back into the world. Well, that's a pretty good way to look at it. This is a haven. We can come and enjoy spiritual feasting and recharging, but we leave these doors. We go back into a world that's dominated by sinful thoughts and values. And it may not be that the threat, you know, comes all at once. It may just be this constant chipping away and chipping away. And you know, there's something in, I guess Marty could tell us more about this, but there's something in aviation called metal fatigue. And you take you can do it with a Coke can. I mean, you keep bending that top on the Coke can, it's going to fall off. But you know, you bend it and you bend it and you bend it, or you take an airplane wing and you bend it and bend it and bend it and bend it, and nothing happens till that one bend where the whole thing just totally gives way. And that's the way the world can be. It just grinds and grinds and bends you and bends you. And you know, and somebody says, well, it's okay if you bend, just as long as you don't break. How many times do you have to bend before you snap? And so we're being bent all the time. You go into the world, you're being bent. Language, sexual innuendo, sensual approaches, lying for the company. You know, we're just being bent and bent and bent and bent. Where is that breaking point? Most jobs have all or a good portion of these elements that we've been talking about, because this is what our society has become. We have become a coarse, vulgar society, hostile to godliness and purity. I do not think that's an overstatement. What is the line of work where profanity is not part of it? Whether it's the sports world or whether it's the corporate office, the headquarters, it seems to me, just by my observations, more from a distance and not being in that world, but especially listening to what some of you said in the surveys, vulgarity is just simply part of the fabric of our society. We're a vulgar people. And it's interesting to sometimes sort of watch the gyrations we'll go through to, you know, penalize this guy for uttering a profanity in public, but, you know, it's going on all the time behind the scenes, and nobody seems to care about that. Another observation, recognize that other Christians are dealing with what you're dealing with. And I'll have a suggestion to make about that in a moment. But the office is not life. No man can serve two masters, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24. The job should remain the means to an end, not the end in and of itself. The job should not be life. But the job rather should be a vehicle to support ourselves and our families so that we can do spiritual service unto God. That's what the job is for. It's not for my ego. It's not so I can rise to the top of my profession. It's not so I can make triple-digit income and so on and so forth. Live in this kind of a house, live in this neighborhood. That is not the point of the job. The point of the job is to support me in this world so I can serve the Lord and serve my family. If we lose sight of that, we've just lost sight of everything. There's a lot here, folks. I'm trying. Practical suggestions. Look at Mark chapter 1. And I know we haven't had any scriptures to this point, but I wanted to get the situation before you, before we actually think. Page 673 in the Pew Bible, Mark 1. I want you to look at the stress and strain that Jesus lived under and what he was doing about it. Now at evening, when the sun had set, they brought to him, verse 32, all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. Then he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew him. It's easy to read through that and go, yeah, well, you know, it's Jesus. Think of the stress and strain that he is under with people constantly clamoring for his touch, his words, his attention, his healing. Fix me, fix me, fix me. You ever get tired of people doing that to you at work? They come to you with their problem, want you to fix it? And what do you want to say? Fix it yourself. I have my own problems and my own stresses and strains to deal with. Fix it yourself. Here's Jesus fixing everything for everybody. Now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, verse 35, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. And Simon and those who were with him searched for him. He couldn't even go out and pray without people coming and clamoring for him. When they had found him, they said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." You'd think Jesus would want to say, "I know. That's why I'm out here." And sometimes that's what we have to do. Everybody's looking for me, folks. Soapbox time. Warning, warning, warning. I'm holding out on cell phones as long as I can. The tide is against me. Everybody's got one, but I am a dinosaur. I love you, brethren. I do not want to be available to you 24 hours a day. I have a message recorder on my machine. I'm just kidding. If you need me, call me. But you're not going to get me if I'm in the car. But we've made ourselves so available. It's no wonder we're worn out. We're to the end of the road. How do you respond when the phone rings? You answer that question for yourself. How do you respond when the phone rings? We need to begin each day with prayer. Some kind of reflection on God, if not prayer, which I would recommend after the example of the Lord, but meditation on God. What is this day about? What am I about to do? Why am I going out of my house? Where am I going? What's the environment going to be like? What do I need from God to get me through this? If we just start into the routine every morning, throw the covers off, into your slippers, into your PJs, down, pour the cereal in the bowl. I mean, we just start going through the motions without understanding what we're doing that day and the circumstances in which we're going to be living. We're giving Satan an advantage. We're not being as aware as we need to be. And many other examples could be multiplied. Paul needed prayer, not just his own, but the prayers of others for him. Secondly, Titus chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. This is page 802 in the Pew Bible. But this is a word to the wives. First of all, be aware of your husband's world. Perhaps after we've gone through some of this, it might be a little more understanding if he does come in grumpy every once in a while. I'm sure he doesn't do it every day. But when he comes in a little bit grumpy, stop and think about what he's been fighting with all day. And you've had your own struggles. You've had your own warfare going on. Maybe with toddlers. It may be with running errands. Somebody forgot their lunch and you're having to take that to school or meeting with a teacher. Everybody's got their struggles and everybody needs to understand the other ones. But for the purposes of this lesson, this is about the man who's trying to get out of the world and make a living for his family. Understand not only where he is all day, but make a haven for him when he comes home. Give him a place where he can come. Not that he doesn't have responsibilities at home, but he can get away from the barrage of ungodliness and profanity and stress and strain that's heaped on him by everybody in the office. Titus chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. Older women should admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers. And there's so much more in that word, you know, than just cooking dinner and mopping the floor. We want to demean this role by pointing to a word like homemakers. Oh, homemaker. I'm telling you, the ability of a man to get out and fight this battle and do this is because many, many times of the home environment you're creating for him. Because he's out there doing that does not mean your role in providing that support mechanism and foundation underneath him is somehow unimportant. And it just chaps me in this society we live in where we just want to sneer as we say homemaker, as if that is just totally beneath the dignity of a human being. And God says this is the role primarily I want you in, and it's so vital to the ability of the man to do his job and the family to function as it should. Examine your true motives. I'll just refer to these. I'll be brief here. But page 791 in the Pew Bible, Philippians chapter 3 and verse 15. We're ignorant, and we can fool ourselves. We can tell ourselves we're doing one thing for one reason, when in truth we're doing it for another. Our motive is something entirely different. It is so vitally important in this matter and in all other matters that we try to be honest with ourselves and see who we are and what we're doing for what it really is. And the promise in Philippians 3:15 is that if in anything else we think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you. That God will help us, if we're intent on knowing, He'll help us see ourselves for what we are and what our deeper motives are. And it's just so easy to lie to ourselves and tell ourselves, oh, well, this is the reason why I'm taking the promotion. This is the reason why we're going to move from this neighborhood to that neighborhood. Well, this is the reason why I'm buying this kind of a car. Come on. Ask yourself the hard question. Peer a little bit more deeply into what your motives really are. Because Satan is singing your tune and mine. And he's just pulling us along and pulling us along and pulling us along. And I tell you, one of the greatest dangers to a Christian is self-deception. Telling ourselves one thing when truth is something else. And we need God and we need our brethren. We need our brethren to help us with that. To help hold us accountable to who we really are and what we're really doing. Well, nip slips in the bud. It's going to happen. You're going to say the word everybody else in the office is saying. When the secretary comes in and three-quarters of her cleavage is showing, it's going to be real, real tempting not to look. And it might be you find yourself staring too long and then beginning to wonder about things you ought not to be wondering about. It's going to happen. I don't mean to accuse. I'm just saying we're human beings and we're weak. And we get in these high-pressured situations and then it just wears on you day after day after day after day after day after day. And you keep fighting and fighting and fighting and pushing that water back and pushing it back and pushing it back. That is wearisome. And Satan knows it. And he knows he can wait you out. And he will. But I respond to an overture somebody makes to me. I say a word I shouldn't say. I got caught in a moment of weakness and I did fudge about the numbers. You got to stop and repent and acknowledge it for what it is and not blame somebody else and say, I'm not going to do that again. God, forgive me. It was not right. I shouldn't have said it, fought it, done it. But I'm rededicating myself to being a different person. I will not let that be part of my character. We talked about that in Bible class this morning, in the auditorium class. You know, we're following the dictates of the devil or we're following the dictates of God. And it is so important that when we see traits of the devil in us, that we stop at that moment and fight. Dig your feet in, dig your heels in, draw the line and say, I will not become that. I did it, but I'm not going to become it. I think that's part of what Romans 6 is talking about in this change of mind. Consider yourselves to be dead to sin and alive to God in Christ Jesus. It's not that we're not going to have the inclination or the temptation to sin. We will. But when I do give in to it, that's it. I'm drawing the line. And don't attack the elders or the preacher or your brethren for coming and saying, look, brother, I'm concerned. I've seen what you've done, or I've heard what you said, or words gotten back. And they're trying to help you. They're trying to be your friend. They're trying to save your soul. Use that accountability to be a stronger person. Do not slip into apathy. And it's easy to do because we're so at odds with these forces that we're living among. Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Your job deserves your energy and your effort and your might. If it's worth spending a day of your life on, do it well. But don't become apathetic and say, it doesn't really matter how I do it because of the way they treated me last week. And that is so tempting. And that's why he goes on and points out that you're to do things in verse 23 heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Because that's ultimately who we're serving here. This is a question of my character, not whether I can please my employer. That's secondary. The issue is, am I going to act as the Lord wants me to act in this situation? Not measure my response by how the company's treating me or what they're paying me, etc., etc. This is a matter of honor and character and integrity before the Lord. And this job that sometimes we think is worthless, this is what the Lord wants us to be doing. He wants us to be energetically employed, gainfully employed, providing for our needs and our families and those who are without. So we keep ourselves out of trouble is a big part of this work that we're doing. Idleness is not good. To keep us focused on something that this world needs and our family needs and we need. But if we become apathetic or lethargic about it, we're defeating the purpose that the Lord has for us in this whole matter. And then here's just a real down-to-earth practical one. Have lunch with a fellow Christian sometime. Find out who's working around you and call them up and say, you know, can you go to McDonald's today? I need to get out of here. I need to be with somebody who thinks like I do, talks like I do, and acts like I do, and wants the things that I want in life. Brethren, we need each other not only weekly, we need each other daily through the week. And part of the power of Satan in all of this is that it's divide and conquer. He gets us away from each other. He makes us feel isolated and alone in the battle that we're fighting. And once we begin to enter into that sort of a mindset, we become vulnerable, we become weak. Find an ally. Find somebody you can share the struggle with. And it may be, and it must be to a large extent, your mate. But it might also be that you need to spend time with somebody else who's in that world you're in. And when you say, you know what my boss said to me, they go, I know it. Boy, I've had to deal with the same thing. You know they understand. And then maybe you can have a prayer and say, let's go back at it. Let's go back at it. How well are you doing in this struggle? And by asking that question, really I'm asking those of you that are not committed to Christ. How well are you doing? This world will grind us all down and spit us out and run over us on their way to the next one. Are you handling these kinds of stresses and strains and difficulties well? Are you doing it without Christ? Do you feel like you're losing ground or have lost ground so far that you can't make it up? It's hard enough with the Lord, but we can't do it without Him. We can't just decide to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and have enough gumption and self-control that we're just going to not let these things bother us. We need God's help. We need the help of the Lord every day to fight against these influences and not just keep those out, but develop the positive character that the Lord would have us to have. As we close our service, can we help you in any way respond to the Lord? We'd be happy to spend a few more minutes. I know this sermon's been a little bit long, but we'll spend gladly a few more minutes to help you. If there's something we can do or there's a way we can study with you, pray with you, help you become a child of God and draw your own line between yourself and the world and say it's going to be different from this point on. We'd be glad to help you in that. Can we do that while we stand and sing?